This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Eddie Chapman. What a lout. He was a cad, a crook, a safecracker, and a confidence man. When the Germans invaded England's Channel Islands in 1940, they found Eddie Chapman in prison for some scheme, and he offered to spy for the Nazis. Add traitor to that list of loutish traits. But after he was trained and dropped back into Britain in 1942 to sabotage an aircraft factory, Eddie Chapman presented himself to the British Secret Service and told them that all along he wanted to spy for them, to be a double agent. In fact, despite a few obvious character flaws like being a compulsive womanizer, liar, and fraud, Eddie Chapman was also charming, intrepid, maybe a criminal genius, and very, very brave. For years, his complete story has been buried in classified files, but now the story of the British double agent who was so successful he was awarded Germany's Iron Cross is told in the book Zigzag by Nicholas Booth, who joins us from our studios in London. Nicholas, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Is this one of the last great stories to be discovered from World War II?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's an incredible story, and I first came across it when I was a kid in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, the secret files were released. And I thought, well, here's a way to actually tell the story. And the great missing link in the story is the fact that Eddie's widow, I think you have to say long-suffering widow, Betty, is still alive.
Betty, who we should explain, he used to introduce by saying, she's seen me through six mistresses or something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, and Betty would sort of smile through gritted teeth. But one of the interesting things is, in all the material I'd read, I'd never got a handle on his character. And, you know, reading the story, how did this lad who grew up in near poverty in the 1930s end up with this extraordinary series of adventures? And so by talking to Betty, reading the files, meeting his friends, I think I've got quite a good handle on that.
How did he, a prisoner in jail in Jersey in the Channel Islands, convince the Germans that he wanted to spy for them?
Well, he was on the run from the police and decided to go to Jersey on holiday with Betty. And the first she knew that there was something amiss was they were having lunch one Sunday. And literally, the waiter was serving them wine. And Eddie looked up, and his hands started shaking, and said, "Oh, God." And then literally shot out through the window. And that was the last she saw him for something like 6 years.
Did he leave a kid?
Yes, I don't know. Defenestrate is one of my favourite words, so I've been able to use that in this book. He literally jumped through the window. He was on the run, and then he was arrested, thrown into jail. He managed to escape. They caught up with him again. And it was actually because of that escape that he was then in jail when the Germans invaded. But he went to see them, and he said the legendary line, "Ich bin ein Verbrecher," I am a safe-breaker. And he convinced them that he was serious, that he'd be a great agent to have, to be parachuted back. But all the time, from his MI5 files when he was interviewed during the war and long after, and talking to people who were with him at that time in the jail, they all knew that he wanted to try and get back. So it was sort of his safe passage back to the UK would be to work as an agent.
How did Eddie Chapman manage to convince British intelligence at a time when they were absolutely ultra-vigilant about spies and saboteurs that he wanted to be a double agent? Would have been so much easier just to let him languish in prison.
The two great successes of wartime intelligence were the use of double agents and the fact that we were reading the German codes. Mm-hmm. So right from the summer before, when he was being trained and the progress reports were going back up to Berlin, the British knew there was this fellow called Chapman. They knew he had something to do with the Channel Islands, where he'd been picked up. They knew he was a certain age. They knew he'd also lost some of his teeth in a parachute accident. Again, a typical Eddie, practiced for a parachute, lands, knocks most of his teeth out. So they were aware there was this person, but they didn't know quite who he was. And Eddie sort of convinced them that, look, this is me, this is what I've been doing. And they could compare what Eddie was saying with the fact that over the last 6 months they had these reports back from France to Germany. So they knew that he was reasonably kosher, but they didn't quite get a handle on his character. And within the first couple of days, they realised, well, actually, he was fairly reckless, but actually incredibly brave.
The man he really impressed and who became his conspirator, his protector, and eventually we might even fairly say friend, was Baron Stefan von Gröning.
That's right. Baron von Gröning was this large, corpulent, sort of aristocratic figure who'd been in Britain. He'd also been in America before the war. And he and Eddie bonded, and they would get drunk together, and they'd go up to his quarters. And long after the war, when Eddie's daughter was married, they invited him to the wedding, and they met. And the Baron burst into tears and said, "This man saved my life."
Well, you make plain in the book that von Gröning was in a sense both protected and promoted by Eddie's perceived success as a German
exactly.
spy.
And also from conversations that Eddie had with him after the war, he suspected that Eddie was working as a double agent. That's the most fascinating thing of all. But here's the crucial thing about Eddie. He spent 18 months in occupied France. He was at first in the chateau in northern France, and then he came back to England and then went back and was then in Norway. So unlike a lot of the other double agents who were in places like Madrid or Lisbon, there was no way he could be, you know, taken to a safe house and exfiltrated from the country. He was living on his wits. As I say, he had this genius for survival.
I must say, whenever he was in a so-called safe house and they were training him, boy, seemed to be a good time was had by all.
A good time was had by all. I mean, he disappeared one day and the Germans found him in a bar dancing with a girl, and they were so relieved to find him that they all got totally drunk and then ended up back in the chateau. And von Gruning was livid about this and then just thought, well, I'll teach him a lesson, and then just poured more and more green chartreuse down his throat. And you can imagine what happened after that. They had sort of had this hangover that lasted for 2 days, and I don't think he ever drank that much ever again. And he always said he had a great time. I mean, he was insulated from a lot of the horrors of the Nazi occupation. They're in the chateau, they had great food. Eddie also had a pet pig. And there's wonderful things in the MI5 files from when they were sending back reports to Berlin on the progress of training. And this really baffled MI5. They couldn't understand who or what this Bobby was. It turned out to be Eddie's pet pig.
So he's parachuted into Britain late at night, and his mission is to blow up the de Havilland aircraft factory.
Exactly. He'd come in a Junkers as part of a raid flying in over Cambridge, and this plane petered off and was going around in great circles because a night fighter suddenly was onto this lone bomber. And then he tried to get out and he got stuck because he'd got this enormous great parachute on his back, but it got jammed in this sort of this hinged door. So he's hanging upside down screaming blue murder, and the navigator comes out and literally kicks him in the seat of the pants, and then bang, off he goes. So as well as that, the oxygen mask failed, and so this apparition appeared in the middle of the night in this farmhouse, and the farmer's wife was absolutely horrified when this guy turns up in a sports coat with blood everywhere, smiling, you know, and it's just such a great scene of incongruity, really. So they called the local police and they start frisking him, and then they find this suicide pill in this turn up of his trousers. They just wondered, who on earth was this character? What the hell was he doing? Where had he come from? Because he just seemed so happy and serene.
How did he fake blowing up the de Havilland aircraft factory?
Over the years,
we should explain, he had to do this to convince the Germans that he was still their guy and was carrying out their mission.
That's right. His mission, should he wish to accept it, was to come back and blow up the factory that assembled the Mosquito bombers, because the Nazis were getting very, very agitated that this bomber that was as fast as a fighter was getting through. So Eddie's mission was to blow up the factory. Well, they couldn't really do that. So a group of Royal Engineers went in overnight and they dressed the factory as though it had been blown up. So the Germans then thought that Eddie had achieved his mission.
Eddie Chapman at one point tells the British that he wants to return to Germany to assassinate Adolf Hitler.
He said this at the time, and MI5 said, no, you don't want to do that, because they were absolutely terrified that, you know, he would do something like that, because he was a fairly reckless character.
They're also concerned about the repercussions.
Exactly. And also, at that point, by 1943, there was the famous psychological survey that said Hitler was, in a way, the best foot forward, because he was so erratic that you might as well keep him in power, because then we have a chance of winning.
Yeah, because he'd invaded the Soviet Union, he declared war on the US, all stuff that was...
Stuff like that. Yeah. So it wasn't really in anybody's interest to kill Hitler. So it's quite an interesting one. He sort of says it and they're horrified, and they said, you know, why do you want to do this? And he smiled and said, what a great way out, because it would have been his mark in history.
Nicholas, in the end, having lived with Eddie Chapman, in a sense, for a number of years while preparing this book, do you wind up thinking he was a patriot, a total con man, or some merry combination?
The best way I can put this, some of your listeners will have known somebody at school who was slightly crazy, who always managed to get into trouble, and I think that was Eddie, that he would go to nightclubs and he would fall in with the wrong sort. But he was, I think he was extraordinarily brave, and I think he was a patriot. I think there's no question of that, that he was doing this to try and help the country and to try and get out. And I think the best description I came across, which is actually the final line of the book, was one of his wartime handlers said he was a rogue but a very brave man. And I think that's it. I think he was a patriot, a rogue, a hero. God doesn't make Englishmen like that anymore, I'm afraid.
That we know of. Nicholas Booth, his new book is Zigzag, The Incredible Wartime Exploits of Double Agent Eddie Chapman. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.